May it please the court, Robert Licky on behalf of the appellant Japan Foods. This case could be seen simply as an error correction case, but I'm not going to re-argue the facts. Rather, what I want to focus on today is the social issue of entitlements versus contracts. I've noticed this, that there's a filtering down primarily in the media, and I think primarily in the sports media, sports talk shows. Because we live in a society where we have, sports figures, we have celebrities, we have people who perform very well. And somehow it's crept into our society that when you perform well, you get to renegotiate your contract. Athletes, you hear about this all the time. Athletes, if they perform well, then they're entitled to renegotiate their contract. But what does that do to the law of contracts? And that's what I think this case is about. And I actually commend plaintiff's counsel for adapting this case to that, to what I perceive as that social strain that we have. And I think you did a very good job of focusing the jury on that particular attitude.
Mr. Lichty, long before high-paid baseball players and basketball players, we had the concept of modification of contract.
Right.
And isn't that what we're talking about here, is whether or not there is support contractually, not only consideration-wise, but an agreement-wise for a new deal?
Yes and no. What we are talking about is making a new deal, actually a deal on top of an old deal. That's what the facts talk about. But what I'm talking about is, how did the jury come to the conclusion that it came to? Now, we focus on that April 2007 meeting. All of the negotiations for this alleged contract occurred at the April 2007 meeting. If anything was going to be offered, it would be offered then. If anything was going to be held back, according to the theory in the Lux case, it would be held back then, if there was any forbearance. And I submit that there's simply nothing was offered by Mr. Aoki, and he forbore nothing at that April 2007 meeting.
Looking at the Lux case in particular, a lot of discussion in the case about, or maybe it was the Kuta case, I'm not sure, you'll correct me, I'm sure, that deals with essentially employment at will contracts. And if one party simply forbears from terminating the contract, that apparently is sufficient consideration.
Yes.
Why isn't that the case here? Mr. Aoki had apparently just an oral contract, an at will employment.
Right.
And he had the opportunity to go elsewhere if he wished.
Right.
Why isn't that enough?
What did he negotiate in the April 2007 meeting? That's the key. Because remember, that the counterpart to this, the counterpart to consideration, is the meeting of the minds. Was there a negotiation where he said, I'm going to quit unless you give me something extra? And so then Michelle Trujillo says, okay, I'll give you something extra. We now have a contract. Because he said, I am going to forbear from doing this unless you give me something. So she says, okay, to hold you here, I'm going to give you this extra, the ownership interest. There was no such negotiating.
How about an implicit promise, if you will? It doesn't have to be an express promise just for that, does it? There can be implicit consideration.
Well, I don't see how you can have a meeting of the minds unless there's at least a discussion of it. You have to have a discussion. Now, there are certain things that are implicit in the UCC, and that's all about contract. Well, part of it is about contract formation. So if there is a normal way of doing business, and if you say X, and that implies all of the extra baggage that comes along with it, yes. I mean, that's where implicit understandings come about, and that's what the UCC codifies. And that makes sense. But in our case, we don't have that at all. This is a unique situation. It's kind of like buying a piece of art. It's not a fungible situation. It's very unique.
Mr. Lichty, as I understand your argument and your brief, at most, your contention is they had an agreement to agree. And they never came to...
No. According to Michelle Trujillo, she was very specific. I said I would give him up to a 20% bonus in my discretion. That was her mind. His mind, he thought that he had a 20% ownership interest. Now, he says that the jury resolved that meeting of the mind in his favor. But I submit that there can be no meeting of the minds when there has not been a discussion on the point. And we showed a variety of things in the brief, a variety of numbers, where Mr. Aoki admitted that there was no discussion concerning how his profit sharing would be measured each year. And there's a difference between the low figure and the high figure, 75%. So we know it's a substantial difference. He said, no, I fully admit, we didn't discuss that. Is there a meeting of the minds? No. It's impossible. There could not have been a meeting of the minds.
But your argument means, as I understand it, that the jury had to accept Michelle Trujillo's testimony and not Mr. Aoki's.
No, I had to accept Mr. Aoki's testimony.
Because we're looking at judgment notwithstanding the verdict, and that requires that we look at this at the facts in the light most favorable to
right.
Mr. Aoki.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So if his testimony was that he understood he was getting a 20% share of the restaurant.
And 20% profit sharing.
And 20% profit sharing. And don't we have to accept that?
What does 20% profit sharing mean?
Well, there was a payment later of $4,500.
And that wasn't even 20%. That wasn't close to 20%.
I understand that, but the evidence has to be construed in the light most favorable to him.
Right.
So if that were categorized as he did in his testimony as a payment for profit sharing,
right.
Don't we have to accept that?
No.
Why?
No, because now what you're looking at is, okay, what's the payment? Let's play this mind game. Let's assume that they both agreed that there was going to be a profit-sharing plan. And then let's assume that Michelle paid out the low end of the four numbers. She paid 20% of the low end. He said, wait a minute, I need 20% of the high end. And you shorted me on my profit-sharing. Let's say that was the lawsuit that was tried. Would there have been a contract for one figure or the other if an essential figure was never agreed upon? Indeed, the essential figure was never even discussed. So it's impossible for it to have been agreed upon.
There was testimony, as I recall the record, from Mr. Aoki that he thought the 20% was of net profits.
I do not recall that. I do not recall.
Assume that's true. Does that cure the problem?
No, because was there a meeting of the minds on that? Then he has to show that the subsequent performance confirmed that. No, it didn't. So what we have here is simply a gift, and he wants to enforce it as a contract. What I submit is that it cannot be enforced as a contract because essential terms were simply not agreed upon because they were not even discussed in the first instance. And then the other point of error is the fact that the instruction was not given. And I cite the court to page 1158 of the transcript, and that's where I actually read the instruction to the court. And the judge said, okay, that's fine. I'm not going to give it. And I said, I want to add the sentence that continuing employment is not sufficient to constitute consideration. And that wasn't given to the jury. In a case like this, where the word consideration is such an unusual type word, and it's the legal understanding of consideration is not something that any juror would typically use. This type of instruction is something that the jury has to be given. They have to be told what the law means. And if they're not told something like this, they can be led astray. And so I submit that that's the other error in this case. And I for the life of me, I don't know why the judge would not give that particular instruction, except that it simply was not part of the approved instructions in the jury instruction book. when it came to consideration. But that was, that language was taken right out of the case law, right out of CUTA, and actually Lucht, the Court of Appeals version of Lucht. But that was from our point of view, the principle was affirmed by the Supreme Court. It's just the mirror of the Lampley case, that there was forbearance. I would like to reserve the rest of my time, if possible. Thank you.
Please, the court, counsel. Good afternoon. My name is Dale Parrish. I represent the plaintiff, Rex Aoki, and I did try the case. I would like to first respond to the points made by Mr. Lichty, and specifically entitlements versus contracts, and his analogy to the sports world and sport contracts. This is a case where it was undisputed that Mr. and Mrs. Trujillo were contacted in late 2004 by then owner Kimmy Loeffler, and she asked if they would come back from California to manage this restaurant. They did not have experience. They advertised for a sushi chef, and in July 2005, Mr. Aoki answered an ad in a newspaper for a sushi chef, primarily because he noticed it was on the West Metro side of town where he has lived for many years in Lakewood. Mr. Aoki had been a sushi chef for a long time in the family-owned business, Akibono, here in Sakura Square in Denver. Mr. Aoki entered into what was a regular agreement for employment back in July 2005 and began working. But it was the almost 2 years between July 2005 and April 2007 that really tell the story in this case. And that's because during that time, Mr. Aoki was told by Michelle and Marco Trujillo that they were going to buy the restaurant from Michelle's mother, Kimmy Loeffler. And in fact, they did do that. There were a couple of different bills of sale that were admitted as exhibits into evidence, but the final bill of sale was exhibit number 7. And that not only was the bill of sale that marked the Trujillo's interest in going to Rex and asking him to stay, and but it also was a measurement or a yardstick for the value of the company that was used. And one of the other arguments that the defendant has made is that there was no yardstick or no way for the jury to assess damages. And this was a reasonable basis for the jury to do that. The Trujillos had told Rex that not only were they going to buy the restaurant from Kimmy Loeffler, Michelle's mother, but they wanted to be able to pay that off. And they wanted to be able to pay that note off with revenues that he helped generate by really creating and building the sushi bar. And so shortly after the bill of sale, they met with Rex. And there is an error in the briefing in as much as there is an allegation that Rex scheduled a meeting when, in fact, the Trujillos asked to meet with Rex. And the argument that there was no negotiation or no discussion, as Mr. Lichty just recently put it, simply does not follow the facts of that meeting. That April 2007 meeting, there was discussion and there was formation of a contract. In simple terms, there was an offer. And the Trujillos were offering Rex certain terms because they had seen what had happened in the roughly 19-20 months since he began working,
And precisely what was it they were offering, Mr. Parrish, in terms of the definiteness of and specificity of the contractual terms?
Your Honor, the offer was threefold. It was a 20% ownership in Japan Food Concepts, which is the corporation that owned Kobeon Restaurant. It was 20% profit sharing. And it was a two-week paid vacation. It's important to keep in mind that the defendants knew Rex Aoki, knew of Akebono Restaurant, and knew about his interest in having an ownership interest in the restaurant where he worked. This was all knowledge that had been gleaned from July 2005 until April 2007. So, in fact, there were discussions and there were negotiations. And they may have not taken a classic form, but they spanned almost 2 years. And then right after the Trujillos purchased the restaurant from Ms. Loeffler is when they scheduled a meeting with Mr. Aoki. I believe it was at Mimi's Cafe out on the western side of town. And they were ready to move. They had represented to him, we've now purchased the restaurant. We're making payments on it. And if you don't mind my adding, you can see later in the case, Kimmy Loeffler tried to change that purchase and sale agreement. There's another exhibit where they tried to amend that into an employment agreement kind of late in the day. But throughout this trial in front of Judge Munch, it was very, very clear that although Ms. Loeffler treated the restaurant as her own, the true owner was Michelle Trujillo. And Michelle Trujillo was the one who made the decision to make the offer to Rex, which he accepted on the spot.
And its 20% ownership interest, was it burdened by a corresponding debt to, I mean, the debt was being paid, I take it, by the Loefflers.
The debt was being paid by the Trujillos.
The Trujillos.
Ms. Loeffler, yes.
And so they were picking up his obligation as well?
The true answer to your question, Your Honor, is that there was not a specific debt disclosure by the Trujillos at the time that they offered, that made the offer to Rex. And Rex did not ask, can you show me the debt structure, what was owed? There was information that was shared between the owners later, specifically about the lease agreement and some other overhead. But at the time the offer was made, the answer to your question is no, there was not a disclosure of the debt structure of the restaurant. There was some knowledge. Mr. Aoki did have some knowledge. He worked with these folks daily, especially Marco Trujillo. But there was no documents that changed hands. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, in terms of damages, was there a set off for whatever his debt was, his pro rata share of the debt on the ownership?
Let me answer by pointing out an exhibit to you. It was Exhibit 9, and it was admitted, and it's called Amendment to Stock Sale Agreement. And this exhibit was backdated April 1, 2007. And essentially what it's between Kimmy Loeffler, Michelle Trujillo's mother, and Michelle Trujillo, the owner of Japan Food Concepts. And what it purports to do is change the purchase agreement for the restaurant into an employment agreement for which Ms. Loeffler would be paid $3,000 per month. And mind you, this is overlaid by some bankruptcy issues that were in the case. But the answer to your question is, Ms. Trujillo never wound up paying off Ms. Loeffler for this restaurant. It essentially was purchased by her until the time that they executed a new amendment to stock sale agreement regarding Japan Food Concepts. I would like to point out that Mr. Lichty has emphasized that there was no discussion and no negotiations, which is not supported by the facts in this case. In addition, he has argued, how valuable is 20% of Japan Food Concepts, a la the implying terms if they weren't covered. There was no disclosure by the Trujillos as to how valuable they thought it was. They had just done a bill of sale for $300,000 weeks before this meeting with Mr. Aoki. But some calculation about how valuable that is not necessary to the agreement. The agreement, the offer was accepted by Mr. Aoki without going down to the dollars and cents of how much that 20%, how valuable that was or how much that constituted. Mr. Lichty has also argued, well, how do you calculate the profit? And this, again, is questioning the validity of the agreement or perhaps the enforceability by bringing in a collateral or peripheral issue that has nothing to do with the contract formation. There was clear offer and clear acceptance. And as you pointed out, Your Honor, there was a payment to Mr. Aoki the following year, which he believed was based upon the profit sharing, net profits. And he accepted that without saying, well, I'd like to see the books to verify or to see. The same thing happened in the next 2 years as well. He asked, was told that there were no net profits to share, and accepted those answers from Michelle Trujillo. These, Your Honors, these are not reasons to disavow or to say that there was no contract or to say that there was no consideration. I think the jury saw the consideration that was received by the defendants in this case in spades. They heard testimony of customers, including on May 18, one Josh Droege. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, but it's Droege. And Mr. Droege was an interesting witness because he not only verified the special consideration that Mr. Aoki provided the defendants in this case, and that is a substantive following of customers and really putting a sushi bar on the map. But Mr. Droege had a conversation with Marco Trujillo in Rex's presence where the issue of an equity position was brought up. And this is on pages 58, 60, 61 of the May 18 transcript and confirmed later at page 140, line 22. And this was an exchange where Mr. Droege essentially asked Marco Trujillo if Rex was a part owner, and Mr. Trujillo confirmed that he was. And there was brief discussion about what that meant, and Mr. Trujillo answered these questions consistently with the terms that were used in the transcript. Equity member, page 58, equity share, page 60, group of owners, page 61, and then later at page 140 in the same day, May 18, equity position. The special consideration I just wanted to refer you to begins on page 135 of the May 18 transcript. And Mr. Aoki quietly and humbly, but very specifically, explained what it was that was very different from his position and his consideration as opposed to hiring a normal sushi chef who would come in and punch the clock and cut raw fish and serve it up and then leave. That's not how this went, and we believe that the Pittman v. Larson case was the closest factually to this type of special consideration where that particular salesman provided a customer list and expertise, much like Mr. Aoki did in this case. Mr. Lichty asked you to play a mind game and asked, would there have been a contract under his hypothesis? The answer is yes, there is a contract. And the contract was confirmed later when Mr. Trujillo was asked, where is the contract that we agreed to? And instead of saying, what are you talking about, or there is no contract, they simply asked him to be patient. They said that they would get to it. And the testimony was fairly compelling at trial that these conversations weren't just, passing in the hallway or out, as they're opening the restaurant. This was Mr. Aoki asking for the written form of what he had accepted and what they had offered. So it came to pass that 3 years after that, when he was contacted by somebody who said, I've been asked by the Trujillos to write something up and talk to you about it, that was Mary Graves, Mr. Aoki felt like, finally, this is what I've been asking for and waiting for. This will be my contract. I think the jury reacted to what was presented to Mr. Aoki by Ms. Graves. And I think the jury made specific findings or at least reached certain conclusions about why Mr. Aoki did not sign those agreements that Ms. Graves had tendered to him. And he consistently explained that they did not embody what the party's original agreement was. So thank you very much for listening. I hope that you affirm the trial court and the jury verdict in this case.
Listening to counsel, and he's very good counsel, but it confirms my understanding of what the theory of the case is here. Because I gave such good service for 2 years, I deserve to get more. But that's not the law of contract. So this thought experiment. You see a great car. It's an antique car. It's, you know, some type of special car in the lot. And you know what its blue book value is. And you talk to the and the value of it is actually the sticker price is $80,000, but the blue book is $50,000. So you go to the guy and you say, I'll give you 110% of the value. And he says, deal. How much did you just negotiate for? Was it 110 of 50 or 110 of the 80? Is there a contract? Well, no. There's not a contract. Because an essential term, the sales price, the only real term, was never agreed upon. You did not have a meeting of the minds. One mind went this way, the other mind went this way. You can't have a meeting of the minds without talking about the essential terms of the contract. Page 14 of our opening brief, we have the four ways of measuring annual profits. And Judge Caseboy, I think you referenced that Mr. Aoki said it would be net profit. Is that what the word you use, I believe? There's net income. There's net income from operations, net income, shareholder distributions, and Schedule E earnings. Which one of those is net profit? So Mr. Aoki can use the word, I thought that I was going to get the net profits, which is kind of layperson understanding of what he thought the deal was. But when you break it down, and when you realize that, wait a minute, this is a little bit more complicated than just, you know, taking the money in the cash register and figuring out what your profits are at the end of the year. That's not how it's done. We have four different ways of measuring the annual profits. Which one? Could there be a meeting of the mind on that? No. It's just impossible for there to have been a meeting of the minds. And Judge Graham, you raised another interesting point concerning the meeting of the mind on the debt. We know there was debt. There was $300,000 in debt to begin with. And as Mr. Parrish said, that was renegotiated downwards a few years later. But did Mr. Aoki contribute anything to the debt? Was there any discussion about him contributing to the debt? Did he offer to contribute to the debt? If he's a 20% owner, wouldn't that make sense? It's just a further example of there not being a meeting of the minds. So we didn't have a discussion of value, no meeting of the minds regarding value. Didn't have a discussion of debt payments, no meeting of the minds regarding debt payments. Didn't have a discussion of how profit sharing would be measured, no meeting of the minds regarding profit sharing. So I submit that with all of these unknown factors of the contract, it's impossible for there to have been a contract. Now, Mr. Parrish said that there was discussion in that April 2007 meeting. He said that, but did he give you any fact as to what was discussed? No. There wasn't anything discussed, and the transcript doesn't reveal anything being discussed. Mr. Aoki never said that any of these facts were discussed. In fact, when he was asked about specific items, he said, no, we didn't talk about that. So it's just, it's simply an impossibility for there to have been a contract as we understand contracts. Now, if this court wants to go a different direction, and I understand the law changes, if the court wants to go a different direction where contracts are no longer definite, then the court can do that. But if this court wants to re-educate we attorneys in the trenches, and believe me, you know, we need direction from the court, I think this is a very good case where the court can take this idea of consideration and discuss one of these real fundamental principles of Contracts 101, which is almost never discussed in the law. And with that, I see my time is done. Thank you.
Both for your arguments this afternoon, this case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.